Good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 5th of January. Very nice to have you with us. And let me introduce the panel to you, and then I'll tell you how you can be a part of our conversation, a vital part of our conversation. And then we'll have the conversation, and then you can be a vital part, and then we'll be done. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go on our website, WAMC.org/roundtable. WAMC.org/roundtable. Our panel is made up of the following individuals. Good morning, Dr. Alan Chartok. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm fine. You know, I have to admit that having been hit by the Cuomo freight train has really left me in worse condition than I thought. You know, it's been more, it's had a weighty effect on me, and it's continuing.
We will we'll be talking about that in a moment. We go to another individual who makes up our panel this morning, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You were out of town when all this happened.
Oh, yeah, I was. It was a stunning story, you know, to even see from the long distance, you know, and very sad. And there's been some amazing things written over the weekend, and I guess will continue to be written about the legacy that Mario Cuomo leaves.
And our political consultant, Libby Post, is here, and she was on Friday, and it's great to have you back. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Very much.
Very nice to have you here, and thank you for filling in for Rosemary, who is somewhere.
Well, actually, Mike's filling in for Rosemary today.
That's right. You'll be filling in.
In Thursday and Friday.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's a house of cards.
And she is somewhere, but we're really never sure.
We're not sure where
she is. Where in the world is Carmen
Sampson? We're not sure we're allowed
Sampson.
To say.
Or what she's doing.
And we're not sure who's sending her there.
That's right.
Who's getting the bill. We know it's not us.
That's a really good thing.
Right. All right. So, well, let's talk about, we of course, dedicated our entire hour on Friday, as well as most of the program on Friday, to the
yeah, I listened in on the WAMC app.
That's great.
From North Carolina.
How's it work?
It worked well. Yeah.
And how far away were you?
I was in North Carolina, but I could have been in, you know, Istanbul, and it would have worked, right?
Sure.
They have the internet.
She's not in Istanbul.
Oh, okay. Didn't mean to imply anything, by the way.
No, another T word. But
can I ask you a question, Joe?
Yes, sir.
How do you know?
I've been talking to her on Facebook.
That's a very good point, actually. Right. It's a very, very good point.
The pictures looked cold.
So let's talk a little bit about this. As I said, we dedicated the obviously most of our airtime on Friday to that story, and such a big part. It was a huge news story for us, obviously, because of the close connection that the governor had with the station. But it was a huge international story all the way around. And as Mike indicated, I mean, there's been so much written about the former governor, and it's been really interesting to watch. We see, of course, the most immediate effect, and Mike, you can talk a little bit about this. We'll start off with this, but it's having an effect on the state of the state. Although the legislature still comes to town tomorrow, even though the funeral will be happening, or it's the wake tomorrow and the funeral on Wednesday.
The wake is today, mm-hmm. and the funeral is Tuesday.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I apologize. Mm-hmm. Yes. But the legislature will be coming to town on schedule.
Yeah, they're coming into town on Wednesday. That would have been when the state of the state is, but that was legitimately and certainly understandably put off until later in the month by the governor. But they'll formally convene Wednesday, but they're back for a full week beginning next Monday. You know, you could argue that they still have a lot of issues. I don't know if you want to go into it now, but they essentially left a lot of things undone at the end of the last session, and the speculation is that they're going to pick right back up and start with a lot of the same issues. You know, education funding. There's people calling for the elimination of gap elimination program, which they used a couple of years ago when the economy was bad to cut back on school aid. People want that to be restored. The Women's Equality Act will probably come up again. economic development is big, of course. But one interesting one that the state has on its agenda is how to spend $5 billion or more in a windfall that the state recouped last year from fines of banks that were involved in the financial crisis back in 2008, 9, 10, et cetera. And that'll probably be a big discussion because there's a lot of people who have a lot of ideas on how to spend $5 billion one time only and have it make the most impact. So the big word you're going to hear a lot of, you're already seeing ads on TV, is infrastructure, you know, fixing the roads.
And it makes so much sense to do that. Mm-hmm. If it's one time, get this stuff fixed up.
Right.
I mean, why in the world would you go spend it on letting legislators give it out with their largesse, you know, sometimes phony projects? I said sometimes.
Right. Yeah, you know, I'd like to see some of the money go to, you know, things I've always wanted there to be a capital fund for animal shelters, you know, so that the shelters can raise the level of their physical plants. But, you know, infrastructure, I remember when that Schoharie Bridge went. Yeah. You know, my father called. He was hysterical because I was driving all over the state back then. And he was really nervous that I had gone in the clink. And I drive the Thruway all the time. And there are so many roads and so many bridges and overpasses that are in need of repair. And if there's one kind of investment that we want to make in our state to keep it safe, this is it.
Yeah, it's a gift that keeps on giving. Yeah. And like they say about roads and bridges and infrastructure, sewage systems, et cetera, is that if you put it off, you're going to have to do it. There's nothing to be saved by putting it off. It's going to be more costly, more unsafe, more risky. So it's very likely. I think the speculation is that a lot of that is going to go towards infrastructure.
You're right, Mike. But one thing, you know, I said somewhat cynically, don't give them the money, the legislators, to give out, you know, haphazardly. But then there'll be fights over where the infrastructure repairs will be.
Well, I don't want it to see it all go into the bridge. I think it's got to be spread across New York into the new Tappan Zee.
Well, you can pay me now or you can pay me later.
I know, but that's where it's going to go.
Yeah, some people wanted to subsidize the construction of the new Tappan Zee Bridge so that thruway tolls don't go up and the bridge itself doesn't, so they don't have to charge you know, a toll of like $15 or $17 to go over the bridge.
And of course, there's all that cynical thinking, which is, if somebody's coming from Ohio by way of New York, let them pay as opposed to
New Yorkers have a better pay.
Right. But the other part of it is that the feds isn't giving the state the money that we thought they were going to give.
Well, that's awfully nice of you to put it that way. I mean, I think Andrew pulled
spin.
The fast one, to be honest with you, and they tried to get money that was supposed to be for keeping the river clean.
Environmental facilities.
But they're not going to get it.
Yeah. No, they're not going to get it, and there are many people who think they shouldn't have gotten it. You know,
that was only a small amount. That was only half a billion.
That was not, half a billion.
What's the difference?
It begins to add up, I suppose.
Right.
But really, I thought that was a cynical ploy. Because this is money that was to go for something else and is going to go for something else, by the way. It's not that we're not going to get the money. It's that they weren't allowed to transfer it from keeping the river clean to building the bridge.
Right. He was going to use it for to protect the riverbeds during the construction. That was the argument, and the EPA threw that out.
Yes.
And they are contesting that, and they might get some of that money, but that's not going to be that much when you're talking about a $5 billion, $6 billion project.
Well, as Andrew often says, it is what it is.
It's interesting, Libby, that you mentioned the Thruway Bridge back in 1987 over the Schoharie Creek. I remember quite vividly that right away Governor Cuomo, Mario Cuomo, flew out to be at the scene, and there was footage that was on local TV of the second span falling into the Schoharie Creek on that rainy day in April back in 87. And it just underscored that, we're letting our infrastructure go, and it's a high toll.
One of the most apocryphal, probably, stories that was told about that bridge was that, you know, some guy was able to stop.
Right.
Got out.
Right.
And held up his hands. Right. And some guy came by at a million miles an hour and gave him the finger and went into the river. Now, I've never been able to establish whether that's really a true story.
No, I believe that was actually a story about a bridge in Connecticut.
Oh, is that
very
right?
Very shortly after that. And it was validated. And it was, and you know, he didn't yield, and he handed back the gesture, and
and so and much.
Well, there's nothing right. funny about
no,
that.
No, there's but, nothing right. funny about no, this, but, especially if it was your relative, yeah. right?
But I think 10 people lost their life in this scary bridge, yeah. you know, crash.
And
which
you know,
is very
I mean, I
that was horrible.
We're starting to feel more earthquakes here, more than we did when I moved here 30 years ago.
And that's
ago.
Before the fracking.
Yeah,
that's right. That's without
that's
fracking.
That's without
in New York,
fracking,
right.
and that does also have an impact on our infrastructure. And every in our roads, and so you know, and then there's global warming, and that's going to have an impact.
And asteroids.
Yeah, well, there is that, and you know, different
but
kinds
the,
of things.
The
coming,
ads
but
that
still.
We're beginning to see in you know full page ads in the newspapers, and which is great, and
right.
a lot of yeah. ads on television. You know, they show the impact of bad roads
yeah.
have on your car,
yeah.
and
oh,
the
yeah.
cost it costs you every year. You know, in tires
true.
And
right.
suspension systems, et cetera.
Well,
so.
You know, I don't know about that because. This morning, there was a very good story, you know, about 3:30 or so when I was driving in on the Beeb, on the BBC. And they had one of the world's outstanding women scientists from Great Britain on. And the Inquisitor was saying to her, well, then, on Hard Talk, well, then why are we spending all this money, you know, to land on an asteroid? And she gave the classic answer, it's good for the economy. Puts people to work. We have hundreds of people to work. So, Mike, I just wanted to answer your point.
Right.
That is, the worse the roads are, the more work there is for the automobile mechanics.
Mm-hmm. However, these are shovel-ready projects to fix the roads and bridges. It's going to put people back to work right away, you know, building these bridges
sure.
or
right.
rebuilding these bridges and roads.
Sure.
So that will be it'll pump up the entire economy if we did use it for that. And that's what they're arguing.
And anyway. If we have nicer roads, people will want to take longer trips in their cars, which means gas is cheap. People will buy more cars. The auto mechanics will have plenty of work to do.
All I can say about this gas is cheap stuff is...
just wait.
It comes at a cost.
This gas is cheap stuff is you just better believe we're being set up by someone. I'm not exactly sure who, but we are being set up for a fall.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we will continue right after this short break.
Support comes from Mount St. Mary College, Newburgh, a day-long admissions event for students interested in transferring college credits towards a bachelor's or master's degree. Instant decision available for students with transcripts. January 6th from 10 to 6, msmc.edu. Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties. HVFA.com. And Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York, an independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 5th of January. Very nice to have you with us, 2015. Wow.
Yeah.
Seems weird to say that. But we welcome you, and we thank you very much for being a part of our conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Got one nice letter here, Joe. A condolence from Deborah. To Alan, on the passing of such a great man, I was an avid listener to his lively discussions with the governor over the years. I do wonder if Alan has any insights he'd like to share about why the governor never ran for president and declined Clinton's offer of a place on the Supreme Court. I hope we see the likes of him again. I'd just like to just give you the never ran for president answer, which more people have asked me than anything else, is I have no idea. I really have no idea. Anything else is pure speculation. Now, on Clinton's offer of a place on the Supreme Court, That's a very interesting one, because shortly before, Mario wrote a letter to the president saying, I don't want to be considered for the Supreme Court. He was on the telephone with me, and he says in a private conversation, and said, that guy is never going to put me on the Supreme Court. So now I can put my hand on a Bible. I can tell you that that conversation did occur. And shortly thereafter, very shortly thereafter, he sent Clinton this letter saying, please take me off.
Which is often the way it is in politics.
Please take me off the list, which I found extraordinarily interesting. I think that's the way it was. George Stephanopoulos, several years later, recently, wrote a book in which he said it was all said he was going on the Supreme Court. And I just knew that wasn't true. So at least that is my best insight into what it was. You know, one year between losing Mario and losing Pete Seeger, and you realize something. These people, well, you had special conversations with them or whatever. They don't belong to you. They belong to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has a memory of something. We heard from my friend Rob down at New Paltz on Facebook the other day, who said, we played all of the Cuomo tapes the other day. And he said, I heard the story of Ginger dying. You know, Ginger the dog. Ginger is dying, which we all know so well, almost by heart. And he said, I cried like a baby. You know, he was pretty important to a lot of people.
Well, yesterday I was on at WRPI at Homo Radio, the weekly gay radio show, and Sheila Healy and I talked about the governor's record on LGBT rights. And, you know, when you think about it, in the 80s, this man went so far out, and I'm sure being pushed back by his advisors, but he really went so far out on our issues, and somebody asked why. And my response was, we have to remember this man was a second generation immigrant, you know, of immigrant parents, recognized and probably also experienced discrimination, but he was also a product of Vatican II and liberation theology. And when you put those two things together, when you put all that together, here's a man who believed in liberal principles because he believed in fairness.
Yes, but not everybody in his demographic did believe in those
things. No, this is true.
And that's why, so you say he was an immigrant. There were lots of immigrants.
Sure.
And the last one in, closed the door, pull up the hatch.
Right.
So he was extraordinary.
But
that
he
way.
Was. He was extraordinary. He was able to take from all those different parts of his life and step forward for a group of people. And we're not the only people he's step forward for, but step forward for a group of people where it was not very politically expedient or popular to do so.
Now, you know, he was a religious man.
Yeah.
And the fact that there was a New York Post headline, I believe, that said from a bishop down in the lower Hudson Valley, you know, you'll burn in hell.
Yeah.
This had to be something for him. But boy, he had his sense of what religion was.
But he knew his theology, and I think he knew he was on firm ground. He believed he was on firm ground, and many have seen the enlightenment of his speech at Notre Dame where he defended a Catholic politician's right to be opposed to abortion, but to let it happen because that was the law of the land, and that was a complicated issue that he got a lot of criticism from within the church, certainly. Alan, I have one little quick question. Having now, with Mario Cuomo having passed, do you feel free to share some of the off-the-record conversations, and will you write a book about that?
No, I just wrote one little book, and that was it. Me and Mario, I want you to remember that there was that point. And we have a few copies left, and it's going to be given out during the fund drive along with the conversations and the rest of the things that we have. But I will tell you that, it's... It just evokes all of those conversations in the middle of the night. One that I remember pretty well was I asked him a question one day, and he didn't like it on the air. So at 12 o'clock at night, I got to bed at 7, you know, 8. At 12 o'clock at night, the phone rang, and I picked up the phone, and there was Cuomo. And he starts to give me the business up and down. And Mike, almost every reporter who's alive has experienced this this kind of thing. But it went on and on and on. I said, Governor, finally. I said, Governor, can I say something? He said, no, you've said enough.
And hung up.
And he hung up the phone.
We'll take a very quick break. We'll come back and continue our conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org to be a part of it. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We will also welcome your comments that you can post online at WAMC.org/roundtable, WAMC.org/roundtable. Libby Post, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, all part of our panel this morning. We welcome your comments. We'll continue after the short break.
Support comes from the University at Albany, offering a weekend MBA program for 22 months, including a study abroad session, 518-956-8330. Demarchand, Hudson, New York, featuring winter fashions, gifts, and accessories for men and women from U.S., European, and local designers. Wishing WAMC listeners Happy New Year. Open every day except Wednesday. DEMARCHIN.com. And Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop. Support comes from Lewis Sign Company, a family business celebrating 90 years in the community, supplying signs, LED message centers, digital printing, vehicle wraps, sign and lighting service. Tell the world with signs, lewissigns.com. And Haydenville Woodworking and Design. For over 25 years, a small group of artisans designing renovations, additions, new homes, custom cabinets, and furniture in the Pioneer Valley. HaydenvilleWD.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our discussion this morning, our panel discussion. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also post your comment online at WAMC.org/roundtable. We would love to hear from you. And we have letters like this.
Okay, Alan, my condolences to start. My mechanic is sick of fixing his very own vehicles here in Corinth, and the money spent on my front sway bar linkage could have done a dozen more productive things in my working class life. This micro demonstrates why GPD is such a foolish number to obsess over. It includes war, cancer, divorce, and undue wear on hydrocarbon vehicle fleet. We must parse our data with more awareness and nuance. If you could lead the way, we shall all be grateful. Okay, and then Robert says, let's keep in mind that de Blasio's big sin was saying in public that he had told his biracial son how he should behave if stopped by police due as to avoid coming to harm. Was that so wrong, or is this whole thing just a cynical union-driven power play? Duh, it says. Okay.
We'll talk more about that issue in a moment.
There we are.
Yep. Was that it? Excellent.
I'm afraid so.
Okay, that's fine. Let us talk about other things then that are making news this Monday morning after a long holiday hibernation. And so we'll talk about the funeral of the fallen officer, yesterday, it was 2 weeks ago, that Officer Liu was gunned down, and there was a funeral held for the fallen officer yesterday. And here again, there were protests against the mayor, again turning their backs on the mayor. And it is many officers showing their displeasure with Mayor de Blasio, turning their backs when his face appeared on giant screens set up outside the funeral home where the service was held. And this, even though there had been many pleas on many different fronts for that not to be the case, what a writer just referred to a few moments ago. Thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think this is very, very dangerous. Tell you why. It isn't only this circumstance. It's the fact that this country has one thing that has gotten it through for a long time, and that is that the military respond to civilian authority. They don't turn their backs when an order is given or when somebody says something. They don't become a force of their own. Because once they do, we see it all over the world, they become the potential for coup d'etat anytime, mm-hmm. and do. That has not happened in this country, and we're very lucky doesn't happen. So when you have a semi-military group like the police, and you have, 32,000 policemen and police officers in a city, it's very dangerous when the cops, no matter what their private feelings are, and they're certainly entitled to them, when they pull something like this, because basically it's sticking a finger in front of the civilian authorities, and that's, to me, really bad news.
Yeah, I think it's bad optics. What this comes down to, I think, is a labor dispute. And at the funeral of the first officer who was gunned down last week, the officers turned around in unison when the mayor came on to the podium to give his eulogy. This time, according to the New York Times today, people were mixed. Not every police officer turned around. Some were looking at each other to see if they were turning around. Some refused to turn around and looked forward at the screen. It shows that they don't know what to do, and they don't know, you know, which is the best tactic. And that's what it is. It's a tactic. It isn't a reflection of something broader, in my opinion. And it's just sad that it's become a labor management issue playing out this way.
It gets even worse in a way, because just to bring my theme a little bit more forward, it wasn't only the turning of backs. They also decided not to write tickets. They also decided not to do certain kinds of arrests that they had been doing. In other words, now they think
they're in charge.
They're in charge.
Right.
That's
very
dangerous.
That's scary.
That's dangerous. That's a dangerous development, and I don't think it looks well for their point of view. The commissioner, Bratton, had asked them to lay off, basically. Right. And some heeded his call, but others didn't. And yet they seem to be underscoring that because they're not the military, not the true military, they have a right to have a point of view. And if they're attending this funeral on their own time, they have a right to express themselves. It's a First Amendment right. It's a little more complicated. It's not the same as the military refusing the order of a general.
Yeah, but they're attending that funeral on their own time in their dress blues that were provided.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but it's a little different than a military refusing the order of the commander.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit different, but it isn't all that different.
Hopefully they're there to respect the officer who has died in a fall.
Well, that's the problem. Right. That's the problem. They use this as a political platform. And, you know, when you take a step back from all of this and you think of the little kids and the teenagers who are watching this, you know, it's one more example of why we should disrespect our elders and why we shouldn't respect authority and why we shouldn't respect government. And, you know, you have all these police turning their back on the mayor. Well, why should I respect government?
Well, I agree. I think it sets a horrible example.
Yeah.
They have, you know, after 9/11 and in recent years, nobody has had more public support than the New York City Police and the New York City Fire Department.
Absolutely.
And they have traded in an awful lot of that by this action, yep. which I think was a failed tactic in a political battle between them and the mayor over their own accountability. It seems like if you criticize any police, they all gang up on you. They want to keep it all secret, and that's the way it looks. You know,
that's the way it is. That's the way it is.
It's very Nixon.
Well, I think de Blasio, the mayor, said that. The commissioner said, I'm sorry, during his eulogy, Commissioner Bratton pointed out that, you know, most police officers are outstanding and exemplary, and only a few bad apples. But that's what seems to be defining the image
but
today.
That's well, the way it always is, though.
Well, as you guys know, because I've talked about it too much, I spent about a year being an advisor to the New York City Police Department and sat outside the commissioner's office at the time and got to see the way it was. And I do know I spent one time in a car. We were going around. I was observing because I was evaluating a project as a consultant that they were doing. And the guys who were driving the car said to each other, or to me, "Professor, you know, there, because there were three black guys standing on the corner, there's a crime waiting to happen." So that's one piece of whatever. Now, they may have been right. They may have known who they were dealing with, but there is a presumptive bias there. And so when I'm stopped by a police officer, I say, "Yes, sir." I do.
Well,
I'm over 70 years old, but I say, "Yes, sir," because I know that they have tremendous individual power. And if you're black, get back, as the saying has gone. So it's a tough thing. The second thing is that there was a shooting on a street, and erroneously, I believe, the word came out over the radio, officer down. And I never saw anything like it. I was in the car, and they were coming from the Bronx, the far reaches of the Bronx. They had two sergeants on either end of the street where it allegedly happened, waving them off and saying, "Go away." That's the kind of camaraderie that you expect of this thin blue line, and I understand it all too well.
Let's take a break there. We will come back and continue our conversation. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we welcome your comments also online at WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, celebrating 24 years. Specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts, joyellsjewelers.com. And the Madison Theater, Albany, New York, showing classic and second-run movies, serving organic popcorn, now open the Madison Live Music Performance Theater, themadisontheater.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion, our panel discussion this morning. We welcome you to be a part of it, roundtable at WAMC.org. Also, you can go online, WAMC.org/roundtable, and post your comments there for all to see and comment on and to be a part of an interactive community. Doesn't that sound fun? You know it does. WAMC.org/roundtable. Letters, Alan. I don't see anything, but I'm not getting anything.
Well, so. We heard from George, who says, "As a black man growing up in America in the 1950s and 60s, I can assure you that every adult I knew told me to be careful around the police. I learned rather quickly on my own why this was necessary." And Elizabeth says, "And Dr. Shartok's defense of the Second Amendment was brilliant. No one since the Founding Fathers has described the need for citizen gun ownership better. It is this circumstance that the Founding Fathers feared and the NRA understands," and they say, I'm more eloquent, but I'm not than that. And And then Emily says, good morning, panel. Condolences to Alan and all the loss of and to all on the loss of Mario Cuomo. As a resident of Brooklyn in 1982, when I was in my 20s, I voted for him when he first ran for governor. I will never forget. One year soon after, when the Village Voice did their annual tally of notable New York saints and sinners, they lauded Governor Cuomo for an essay on his position on reproductive rights. He had made it very clear that as a Catholic, he was personally opposed to abortion. But as a public servant and leader, he was committed to every individual's right to their own choice, because his reservations were based on his religion and he fervently believed in freedom of religion. I wish I had a copy of that essay now. You know what to do if you want it, Emily, is you go and you look up what's the name of the college?
Notre Dame.
Look up the Cuomo Notre Dame and you'll see the speech. Yeah. Great. Jim said, read Alan's thoughts on gas. My prediction, gas will stay relatively low until the election season of 2016 comes along, when we will see a materialized sharp price rise aimed at hurting Democrats. Lest you think this is overly cynical, look at the prices in 2008 and 2012. And that's from Professor Jim Hendler from RPI. And Eileen says, my thanks to Alan for playing the Cuomo conversations. I love the way Mario called Alan Chartok. By the way, he called me something else once. He once said, he talked to Ginger about me, and Ginger said I was a fire hydrant with a necktie.
Right.
His dog.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I've also been thinking about the interview about his father and the tree, which you played yesterday. Loved it. The image of the tree being hoisted up in that Queens community with Mario copying his father's Italian accent, just wonderful. We do wish Mario Cuomo could have further influenced American politics, Supreme Court, presidency, anything. His wisdom and compassion seems to be so evident in all he did, a unique characteristic for politicians in our country. Thank you for your coverage, and thanks to Alan for sharing a special relationship. Okay, and I guess that's it, Joseph.
All right. Let's move on to a few other issues that we can get to. We were talking at the top of the program about Governor Cuomo and the state of the state being moved on some of the issues that are facing the state legislature and what will be on the agenda. We also are going to talk a little bit about the president of the United States and his tour, his State of the Union preview tour. This is somewhat unheard of. Typically, there'll be a couple of well-placed leaks of what is going to be in the speech and some murmurs here and some murmurs there a day or two before. But the president is going to be going on a tour across the country to really drum up support for the speech before he even gives it, and will be on the road, which is, I think, fascinating, but also talks about a man who wants to make the most of his last 2 years in office, it appears.
I think it's great. I just think it's great. It's changing the timeline. It's changing the dynamic. Yes, it might give people more time to line up the pundits on the other side. But he's really, you know, knows that he's got 2 years left, and he's going to do whatever he thinks he needs to do to get his message out and to also show the Republicans for what they are in terms of being against anything he does, regardless of the merits.
Well, you know, Libby, I can only remember when he ran the first time, and he gave those wonderful speeches to all of those, and we always saw college kids and hopeful people surrounding him. I do the same thing. I think whoever, they've waited a long time to do it, but I think it's a brilliant strategy, and I would proceed with it.
Yep.
Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that he no longer has to, you know, stay in sync with the Democratic leadership of the Senate now that they're in the minority?
Could be. I mean, that could well be. I think my sense of it, and maybe I'm wrong, is that there's a strategy to running the White House. There's a strategy to running the president. And if you have good advisors around you and they say, you know, do this or do that, sometimes, as in the election, which I thought was appalling, where they lost all those seats because nobody wanted to be seen around the president.
Right. If they had, they wouldn't have lost.
One did and one won.
Right.
You know? And yeah. So now they've sort of freed him up. And I love that. And whoever's giving him advice is obviously giving him good advice. Or maybe he's just taking his own advice.
Higher education he'll be talking about in Tennessee. Housing he'll be talking about in Arizona. And jobs he'll be talking about in Michigan. So three states, 3 days, and that's just the first run. Obviously, the speech will be on January 20th, so he has plenty of time to have more tours and more trips to go out to talk about issues. One of the things it's interesting is that these aren't necessarily battleground states that you're visiting either.
Well, there's more battle. His battle is his legacy. It isn't over votes anymore.
Right.
Well, Michigan is always.
Michigan, sweat. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That'll be fascinating to watch. Again, the State of the Union address will be on the 20th, and we will, of course, be carrying that here at 9 o'clock on that evening. And other news, we want to talk about the FBI. I found this to be a fascinating story, and anybody who wants to jump here and talk a little bit about it, this is from the New York Times, that the employees, the FBI is subjecting hundreds of employees who were born overseas or have relatives or friends there to an aggressive internal surveillance program that started after September 11th, 2001, to prevent foreign spies from coercing newly hired linguists. But that has been greatly expanded since then. The program has drawn criticism from FBI linguists, agents, and other personnel with foreign language and cultural skills and with ties abroad. They complain they are being discriminated against by a secretive risk management plan that the agency used to guard against espionage. This limits their assignments and stalls their careers, according to several employees and their lawyers.
Well, you know what? All it takes is one guy to screw things up. And we have certainly seen that one guy, you know, in the past. So
yeah, but Edward Snowden was white and
didn't have connections.
No, I'm not even talking about Snowden, you know. It's happened before then. I think the worst, and the guy's name escapes me, maybe you guys remember, but there was an FBI guy who they finally brought to justice, and he had given away the store. So what happens is you get one of those, and then somebody on the top says we can never let this happen again.
But isn't it doesn't it stand to reason that the people, the best and the brightest, if you will, who can be your linguists, who have a sense of other languages and cultures.
Other cultures.
Have ties to other languages and cultures.
Right. They have family that are living in the countries that we might have adversaries in, and that would make them.
It seems to be a problem.
Yeah, it is. It's a practical problem. And yet, it's for the very reason they were hired were their skills and their cultural background, and now that's the reason they're being prevented, they say, from being able to be promoted, move up in the ranks. They feel like they're discriminated against, they're second-class citizens. They feel like they're under suspicion simply because they're from or have connections to foreign countries with whom we don't have friendly relations.
It just seems counterintuitive and counterproductive. You know, we want...
And highly discriminatory.
And highly discriminatory. There's no two ways about it. It's racial profiling within the agency that created it. So, but the fact of the matter is they do talk about all of these Middle Eastern folks, but then they talk about Edward Snowden. And Edward Snowden, as I said before, is white, Anglo-Saxon, I assume.
Well, he worked for National Security Agency, but still.
But still, I mean, the fact of the matter is here we have, on one hand, we're a pluralistic society. We want to show folks of Middle Eastern descent that there's a place for them in this country, and that we value them, and that they could be helpful in national security. And then on the other hand, we're doing this.
We don't trust them.
Well,
surely.
And I get what you're saying, Alan, but it really is counterintuitive.
I don't think it's counterintuitive. I mean, I know that my liberal brethren will yell at me, but I don't think it's counterintuitive. I think what you have to do is trust but verify. And I think the question is how you verify. In other words, how strong your checking goes. But do I think that when you're dealing with these serious things, that you have to keep an eye on who's working for you, especially when it's as vast an enterprise as it is? I think the answer to that is yes.
But then they should do it for everybody, because you know what? You've got people.
And how do you know whether they're doing it for everybody?
Well, they're not saying that they aren't doing it for everybody.
Well, they're not saying that they are.
But still, I mean, I'm sure that the good old white guy you know, who claps everybody on the back and carries his gun well and is taking down
a few people. And that last guy I was talking about was a good old Lincoln.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't under as much scrutiny and so can get away with much more.
Well, I think you're making certain assumptions that you don't really know.
Well, you know, and neither do any of us, because we really don't know. Yes.
No,
we
I really don't know.
We really don't know what the inner workings are, and we have to rely on the media.
Is it legitimate for the FBI to be cautious about somebody who has family in China or in the Mideast? Is it?
But it could
be answer
just
the question. The witness will answer the question.
Okay, fine. You know, but I think we need to
verify.
We need to be as cautious around somebody who might have relatives involved in white supremacist organizations here in the United States.
We're dealing with countries that have been known to basically hold hostage the families of people in the United States.
I understand that. It just seems to me that if we want to have these folks be part of our country and be, you know, if they're born here and have lived here and pay taxes here and they have sworn allegiance to the country, you know, the FBI has to check everybody out. It just should be something that everybody has to be checked out in such a way so that we protect our assets.
I have made my comments. I am not going further.
Great. And I love you too.
They're not necessary.
Right. There was a line in that article, though, that talked about the internal war within the FBI. I don't want an internal war within the FBI.
That's not really a confident building.
Right? You know? No, I want those officers skipping into office ready to go today.
But the fact is that there's an internal war within all of those agencies and among all of those
Los Alamos, you know, the atomic energy facility in New Mexico. There was a Chinese national who was working there, a scientist, who was caught getting on a plane, bringing all the trade secrets back to China. You know, sometimes people from foreign nations maintain their alliance, I guess. And that's the fear.
It's like that NFL officiating, that official on the Cowboys party bus.
What happened?
Oh, is that what it was all about?
Yes.
It's kind of the same thing.
It is the same thing. One of the officiating people was seen a few days prior to the game partying with the with
one of the teams.
Yeah, the Cowboys. And then there was a very questionable call in yesterday's playoff game, and a lot of people are drawing. Yeah, you see.
Yes, I do.
Okay. It was just a light way down the program because we were ending on a really bummer note, so I just threw that out there. We welcome you to join our conversation, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. WAMC.org/roundtable if you'd like to post your comments and be part of our social community. And we would love you to do that. Alan, Mike, and Libby, thank you very much. And we'll, I guess, see all of you.
No,
we won't see you tomorrow. But me. Okay, excellent. Right. Thank you very much. Have a great day. And we'll be back. Roundtable@WAMC.org.